question. I'll just do some Q&A. Some people during the break time asked me some questions, and so I just want to finish those up because I think that some of their answers will be of interest to many of you. One person asked, what if you're the person who's always apologizing? Okay. And you do. You find some people that are always, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You know? And that is going to the other extreme of thinking, oh, everything I do is wrong. You know, and that I have to apologize for everything I do. And that's also unrealistic. You know, because everything we do isn't wrong and isn't bad, and we don't have to apologize for existing on this planet. Okay? So if we make a mistake, we apologize. But, you know, aside from that, we don't always need to go around apologizing for everything. Then another person asked, in a family, if the parents are Buddhist and the children are Christian and the children are trying to convert the parents, you have to remember that you are the parents. Yeah. You're the parents. They're the children. And in a home, for there to be harmony, there has to be tolerance. Yeah. And you have to educate your children that they have to be tolerant of people who have different religious faiths. No? And so just because your kids want you to go to church, it doesn't mean you have to go to church. You're not trying to win a popularity contest with your kids. You know, you're trying to practice your own faith because it's something that you know will make you a better person. And I think that people of other faiths have to learn that they have to respect people who have different religions too, and that it's not very nice to pressure and push other people to convert or to become interested in another religion. And so I encounter this a lot with Singaporeans asking me about it, because they're pressured by a colleague or a family member, somebody, oh, go to church, oh, come listen, this. You have your own dignity as a human being. You have your own dignity as a Buddhist. And you say, no, thank you, I'm very not interested. How about if you come to temple and here's a Buddhist book? And then see what they say. But, you know, as Buddhists, we don't go around pushing our faith on others. We're very respectful and tolerant of other faiths. And I think we need to stand up and let other people know that they need to be respectful and tolerant of our faith. You know? Those people would never proselytize to Muslims. You know, they're respectful, the Muslims, you know? They don't do it. Well, we also have to say, you know, we're not stubborn, but we have to say, no, thank you, I'm not interested. This is a pluralistic society. You know, we have many races, we have many ethnic groups, we have many religions, and we have to be very tolerant of the different perspectives. And, you know, please don't push. And if they continue to push, you know, if it's somebody you can avoid, then, you know, you do that. I don't see any reason to hang around and get bombarded by stuff that you don't want to hear. Okay? So you can be polite. You don't have to be rude. You be polite, but you be very firm. Yeah? No, thank you. That's it. You want to keep talking? There's the wall. You're not talking to me. You know? Okay. Then there was another question about contentment. And a teacher was saying, just two things. You know, you want to teach your kids to be content, but you're also trying to encourage them to learn more and do better. Okay? So aren't you sending a mixed message? There's contentment doesn't mean that you don't try and improve yourself. Okay? Contentment means that what is, So we want to accept it instead of reject it because it's already happening. So who we are, what we have, all of this, it's happening right now. Let's be content with who we are. At the same time, in the future, we can aspire to develop our qualities, you know. So being content with who we are doesn't mean we don't aspire to become a Buddha. We can still aspire to become a Buddha. We can still try and learn more and increase our talents and abilities. And at the same time, be content with who we are. Okay? What we want to avoid is the mind that gets very pushy, where we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, or when you're bringing up kids where you're constantly pressuring your kids. Okay, pressuring and pushing, it's what pertains to the last question too, it doesn't work. It doesn't create happiness. Okay. So sometimes we need to give people space, especially with kids, you encourage them. But encouraging is different than pushing your child. Okay. If you encourage them, then they feel happy to do it. If you push them, they don't feel happy. And people always do better when they feel happy. Don't they? Okay, other questions? Oh, one person asked me that they said they have lots of time to meditate, but they can't seem to make it to the meditation cushion. This is a very common problem. What you do is in your diary, you know, your appointment book, you write out the appointment with the Buddha. Okay? You have an appointment with the Buddha for half an hour every morning. Or you're in an appointment with the Buddha for half an hour every evening, you know? You make a time that's realistic that you can do and you put it in your appointment book and you keep your appointments, don't you? And, you know, you're certainly not going to stand up the Buddha and be a no-show to the Buddha. I mean, my goodness! That's the epitome of being rude. Okay? So, you show up for your appointment with the Buddha, and you do your meditation, or you do your Dharma reading and sitting quietly and contemplating. Okay? We always remember to eat. We don't neglect eating, because we know it's important to nourish our body. Well, nourishing our heart spiritually is just as important as nourishing our body, if not more important. Okay? So we need to take the time out every day to nourish ourselves spiritually. It's incredibly important for it to have a happy life. You know, don't get so busy that you forget to nourish yourself spiritually. Because we always remember to eat when we're busy. So we need to remember to, you know, take some time out to be quiet, to be peaceful, to meditate, or to read a Dharma book and think about it, to go to class, go to a temple, go to a retreat. Take the time out. It's very important, you know, for your overall health. Now, other questions people might have?
Could you please something that means a spiritual teacher that can get some shine? The question is essentially that in the Western world, I think there's a supermarket of these Western teachers around. Some of them, I think their qualifications are quite high in the sense that, you know, they follow the internet teachers and they are also quite good scholars on their own. And some of them will become negotiated on their own, right? So the thing is that we only can check on their background from the teachers. But we as Singaporeans, sometimes when we check on them on the internet, the biography is what they have achieved previously with the teacher. But they themselves, the characters that we do not know. So sometimes they download the audio from the internet from the teachers. So the thing is that how do you go about knowing that the teachers are reliable, good, and, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So finding a reliable teachers, or discerning a reliable teacher. I think what you said applies not just to Western teachers, but no matter what somebody's race or ethnicity is, there are good teachers and there are people who aren't so qualified, Okay? It's our job as a student to determine who our teachers are. We're the ones who decide. And it's fine to study with different people without necessarily making those people one of our teachers. You check somebody's qualifications as best as you can. So you might do it on the internet. You might Google somebody and see. Of course, their own website is only going to tell their good qualities. But, sometimes you look on the teacher's website and you see, if there's interviews with them or, what they say in an interview, other things that they say. And the first thing, check that what they're teaching is in accord with the general Buddhist teachings, And then check if their ethical discipline accords with the general Buddhist way of ethical discipline. Check if they have a good relationship with their own teachers. Check and see if they're a humble person or if there's somebody who's always criticizing others and saying that they're the best teacher around. Check and see if they're open, because there are some groups that say you only study with us, you can't go elsewhere. I don't know. I think people have to have the freedom to choose teachers who they want to. Check a teacher's meditative experience as best as you can if they've done retreats or not. See if there's somebody who's compassionate or if they're very angersome and demanding. Okay? So really check as best as you can. And like you say, if you're on the internet looking, you don't necessarily know somebody's qualifications. So you try and listen to the teachings, do as best you can, ask questions about them to other people to try and learn about their qualities. And don't just go on titles. Because even the Dalai Lama says some people, when they're in Asia, aren't anybody special, but then they go to the West and all of a sudden they have lots and lots of titles. Okay? Or in India they're nobody, but they come to Singapore, all of a sudden they have lots of titles. So don't go by titles. Titles aren't indicative necessarily of who's a good teacher and who isn't. Yeah, but we really have to look at somebody's education, somebody's way of living life, and their down-to-earth present qualities. Okay, does that answer your question okay? Yeah. And I think, a teacher, it's very important that a teacher have proper ethical discipline. If a teacher is lying and cheating and sleeping around and doing stuff like that. There's lots of teachers. You might want to look for some other ones. We can never talk about somebody's level of spiritual realization. That's a hidden phenomena, okay, to us. But we can talk about just general ethical discipline as the Buddha taught it. Okay, yeah.
Very noble. Hopefully this question is not, I will not strike some sensitive nerves or set up some issues. Well, this is really bring up some practices where you can get some cleansing or some rites performed to help you get relief from maybe some pain or some bad karma that you might have. Some groups where they can perform rites to help you improve or to get rid of that karma. I have some personal other confusion as to whether this really works. To follow Buddha's teaching, we really have to develop ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we go from there?
Okay. Nobody else can take our bad karma away from us. Okay? No one else takes our bad karma away from us. We have to purify our own bad karma. Okay? So, what kind of rites and rituals are you talking about?
think something basically things like doing some chanting and some puja ceremony.
Okay, pujas and chanting. The whole idea with pujas and chanting is the most value comes from when you yourself do the ceremony. Because if you're doing the ceremony properly, you're transforming your mind. So it isn't just about chanting la 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 la, because then the tape recorder can do the ceremony for you. Okay? The best way to do the ceremony is for you to meditate and transform your own mind. If you don't know how to do that, then you can make an offering, and it's the fact of your being generous with the three jewels that creates some good karma. Okay? But, so it's, you're purifying your miserliness, you're creating good karma by being generous, but nobody else cleanses you of your karma. It's your mind changing that cleanses the karma and that creates the karma. Okay? So there's a big tendency I've noticed in this part of the world for people to feel, oh, I'll go and, rent a llama. Okay? Rent a llama and buy a puja. Yeah? And the less I understand, the holier the ceremony must be. Okay? The more they chant in a language I don't understand, the higher it must be. Okay? The more they ring the bell and play the drum and throw water. Oh, then it's the bigger blessing. That is people's misconception. That's your own superstitious mind. Okay? Somebody else doing some ceremony, ringing a bell, playing a drum, going la 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 la. If that person's concentrating, that person's accumulating good karma. And if you try and meditate during the ceremony, you transform your own mind. But you shouldn't have this idea of, I just pay somebody else to create good karma for me, or I rent a llama who gives a blessing, Because the Buddha was very emphatic. We have to practice and transform our own mind. It isn't about having rites and rituals. Okay? And I see that very much, unfortunately, it's in my own Buddhist tradition, the Tibetan tradition. When people, hear, like I said, if they don't understand anything, then thousands of people come. They do, don't they? The chanting a puja in Tibetan, going bling, bling, ding, 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 bang, 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 sitting on a high throne, lots of brocade, the higher the throne, the more brocade, then thousands of people come. That same teacher, they sit on a low seat and they teach you about loving kindness, 10 people come. What is it that's going to transform your life? What is it you need to do? You need to learn how to meditate on loving kindness yourself. So the best blessing is to go to teachings and learn the Dharma. Okay? Because actually the Tibetan word blessing, it means to transform into magnificence. How does our mind transform into magnificence? By us learning the Dharma, thinking about the Dharma, meditating on the Dharma, and putting it into practice in our daily life. Yeah? All these ceremonies and stuff, that's not what transforms our mind. Okay? So I think, of course, if you're going to offer money, offering it to the three jewels is definitely better than spending it on a bottle of beer. Okay, so if you offer it for a ceremony, yes, that's better than spending it on a bottle of beer. But better yet is if you go to teachings and you do what we're doing today and you really think about things and learn about things and look at your own life and check your own behavior and think, how can I become a better human being? How can I be a better citizen of this planet? That's the real blessing, you know, when you do that. Okay? I got on a soapbox there. But it's something that I think needs to be said. Yeah. Okay. So he's asking about the set of the guided meditations on the Lam Rim, or the gradual path to enlightenment. How to use that, because there's so many meditations on it. The first CD talks about how to do the breathing meditation, and it also has a visualization of the Buddha where you do some prayers and recitations. And that is meant as like a warm-up and a way of creating merit and purifying the mind. So you do that meditation with the Buddha and the prayers, and then you start at the beginning of the CDs with the first meditation, and you do that one. You can listen to it and meditate along as it's being guided. If there's a point that's really interesting to you, you can press the pause button and think about it longer. And then the next day, you again do a little bit of breathing meditation, you do the visualization of the Buddha and the prayers, and then you do meditation number two. Okay, and then the next day you do the same thing, but with meditation number three. And so in that way, you cycle through all these different meditations. Okay, so you go, I forget how many there are, but you do all of them, and then you start over at the beginning. And you do them all again, and then you start over at the beginning. And in that way, you become very, very familiar with the different contemplations and meditations. For example, there's one on precious human life, on the rarity of our precious human life, on meditating on death and impermanence, meditating on refuge and the qualities of the three jewels, meditating on karma, meditating on our ethical discipline, meditating on the sufferings of, or the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Yeah, meditating on generosity, on the antidotes to anger, the antidotes to attachment. You know, meditations on wisdom. There's lots of different meditations. So we go through one by one each day and then keep cycling. And in that way, we become familiar with all the various teachings that the Buddha gave. And each time you do a meditation, it's different. And if you learn the whole path, then when you do the early meditations, you remember things from the later meditations. When you do the later ones, you remember things from the earlier ones. And it really starts to gel and come together. Okay? There's a little instruction booklet with the CDs, and it also kind of explains how to use them.
What's the difference between practicing the Dharma as a lay person and
versus a monk? Okay, so the difference between practicing the Dharma as a lay person and practicing as a monastic, as a monk or a nun. It's a different lifestyle. Everybody can practice the Dharma, but it's just a different lifestyle. When you're a monastic, you don't work for a living. So talk about financial insecurity. Okay, but that becomes part of your practice. Yeah, that's part of your practice. Learning to live simply is part of your practice. Monastics, we don't have families, we don't have sexual relationships. So, you know, that becomes, dealing with all that becomes part of your practice. If you have a family, then you practice within the context of your family and getting along with your family members, creating a happy family. You know, you practice in the context of your work and your career and being honest and being truthful and so on. So ethical discipline is practiced whether you're a monastic or a lay person. You know, developing loving kindness and wisdom is practiced by monastics and lay people. I think one of the big differences is the amount of time that you have for practicing. Yeah, that monastic life provides somebody with much more time to do in-depth practice. And then also monastic life, because of our precepts, we can't follow our attachments quite as easily. So it puts our nose right in front of all of our attachments. and we have to work with it. Okay. Yeah.
Very well. I got a question pertaining to the gentleman's question just now. Is it possible for a highly established spiritual being to transfer that karma from ourselves to them? Because based on our capability now, we are unable to purify the bad karma in this lifetime.
No, it's not possible for somebody to transfer our bad karma to them. The Buddha is the most compassionate being, and there are millions of Buddhas. If it were possible to purify all our karma by the Buddha taking it on and transferring it to the Buddha would have done it by now. If the Buddha had the ability to free us from cyclic existence by purifying our karma, the Buddha is not lacking in compassion for us. The Buddha definitely would have done that. But the thing is that nobody else can take on the bad karma of anybody else. And nobody else can purify the bad karma of anybody else. And nobody else can reap the benefits of good karma of anybody else. Okay? So we're responsible for our own karma. And for creating it and for purifying the negative karma, for dedicating our positive karma so that we preserve it, so, you know, we dedicate it for full enlightenment. Okay? If it were possible for somebody else to save us, somebody would have saved us already. Because there's no purpose to suffering, is there? There's absolutely no benefit or purpose to suffering. If the Buddha or whoever you want could have pulled us out of cyclic existence by their own strength alone, they would have done it. We're not lacking in holy beings who have compassion for us. But there's an English thing that says, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So the holy beings lead us to water. We have to drink. They teach us. You know, they encourage us. They give us, they're enforcing and, you know, reinforcing and encouraging and inspiring energy. But we have to practice. It's like sleeping. You can't say, I'm really exhausted, will you sleep for me? Okay? I don't have any time to sleep. Please sleep for me so I feel better. Or I'm hungry. Yeah, please have a good meal so I'm full. It doesn't work, does it? Yeah, you have to eat yourself. You have to sleep yourself. You have to be responsible for your own karma. Okay? And that actually, I think, is something good. Because it means that we can do something with our life, you know? That we can really take charge of our life and that we can start changing ourselves. And okay, we may not be able to purify all the karma in one lifetime, but we can sure make an inroad and an indent, and we can sure get ourselves going on the path in this lifetime. We have incredible fortune and ability. Yeah, so we shouldn't undermine it and say, oh, I'm just little old me, I can't practice. You know, no, we should, you know, we have a precious human life, we should go and practice. Yeah.
I think the time is short now.
Yeah.
I hope Brother Lover can say briefly about Prajna Paramita.
Well, briefly, and Prajna Paramita. Okay. Right. Prajna Paramita means the far-reaching attitude of wisdom or the perfection of wisdom. That's talking about the deeper nature of reality, how things exist. Basically, okay, you want me to explain briefly, is that the way things appear to us, to our senses, is not the way they in fact exist. That things appear to us as if they had their own nature, their own essence, and we think that things are real and solid with their own nature, making them what they are. But if we try and investigate and analyze and analyze how do things really exist, we find that they don't exist with their own independent essence. They exist dependently. That anything that exists exists because many different components and things came together, and because our mind then looked at that and conceived of it as an object and gave it a label. Okay? So things don't exist in their own right, independent of other phenomena. They are empty of any kind of inherent existence, empty of independent existence. But they do exist, dependent on causes and conditions, dependent on parts coming together, dependent on the mind that conceives them and gives them a name. That's it in brief. Okay? There's many sutras written on this topic, so there's a lot more to say. Okay? So one last question, then we have to close.
Thank you. Could you possibly share with us three books and three people who have inspired or influenced you the most?
Okay. Well, I would say the three people who inspired me the most are His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Zopa Rinpoche, and Sirkhan Rinpoche. Those, I would say, are the three people. But there's many more, so it's not limited to them. Okay? His Holiness Dalai Lama has many books out. You can read many of them. Zopa Rinpoche also has many books out. Sirkhan Rinpoche, I don't think, has, maybe there's one in Italian or something, but he doesn't have many out. Geshe Sonam Rinchen is another person who's inspired me a lot, and he's written several books on the Bodhisattva vow. He did a nice one on the Heart Sutra that explains Prajnaparamita, so you can get that. So those are, I would say, are some of the ones that have inspired me. But I've been very fortunate in being able to study with a number of teachers who have been really inspirational. Geshe Drampa Tekchok is another one of them. He has a book, Transforming the Heart.